Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. If you didn't remember to punch yourself in on the computer, please do that now. Okay. We have described how the six opulences, beginning with Aishwarya, that belong to the Bhagawan, they belong to his very essence. Now we're going to describe, that's his qualities. That makes them, because they belong to his essence, that makes them perfect and eternal and everything else that he is, Sat-Chit-Ananda. Now, what about his personal body, his vigraha? That's the next topic of discussion. Tadevam Aishwaryadi Shatkasya Swarupa Bhutatvam Uktva Shivigrahasya Purna Swarupa Bhutatvam Vaktum Prakaranam Arabhyate. This is another Prakaranam section. Having thus asserted that, it's not just asserted, discussed how, rather than asserted that. Let me change that. Because it wasn't just making making a claim, but it was also so much evidence and proof given. Discussed how. Having thus discussed how his six opulences, beginning with ruling power, belong to his inner self. It's hard to translate the word swarupa. Try different things in different situations. Inner self. Now another section begins for the purpose of asserting. That's another problem. Explaining, maybe. I'll just make a question mark for that. Asserting that his divine personal form is also a complete manifestation of his swarupa. Tatra tasya tadrishatva sachivam nityatvam tavat purvadarshita tadrisha vaikuntadi statvitvena. To this end, first the eternality of his perfect form, which is a close companion of its belonging to his swarup, is proven by the fact. So we're going to first establish one point, that his body is eternal. That's very close to making the whole proof that it belongs to his swarupa. It's his body. If it's eternal, it must be innate to him. We don't have to prove that it belongs to him. It's his body. But we want to distinguish that it's eternal and not temporary. It's not an artificially acquired body, but it actually belongs to his essence. And proving that it's eternal pretty much proves that. So that's the focus right now, is to establish that the body of God is eternal. And that's proven by the fact previously shown that he is the presiding Lord of Vaikuntha, which is eternal. Okay, he has his domain. He's in charge of Vaikuntha. If Vaikuntha is eternal, how can he remain the Lord of Vaikuntha without himself being eternal? Of course, you could argue that there's specific succession, one Lord after another, but that's not reasonable. It's not. We never hear that there's one Vaikuntha not after another. That we never hear about. prapunch avatirna tve pi aha tribihi. That is, form is eternal even when it descends to the material world, is described in three verses. Here is the first of the three verses. Now, this verse is from the Bhagavatam, third chapter of the 10th canto. You can guess who might be speaking here. Kamsa did some speaking in the third chapter, didn't he? Demigods. That was in the second chapter. They offered prayers to Devaki with Krishna in a womb. Did they also offer some more prayers in the third chapter? I think Kamsa begins his persecutions in the third chapter, doesn't he? Yeah. Well, this is the third chapter. Anyway, we'll find out at the end of the Anuchet who's speaking. Nashte loke dviparardha vasani mahabhuteshvadi bhutam gateshu vyakte vyaktam kala vegena yate bhavane kakshishyate shesha sambhyaha. Okay, he had to give it away. Okay, Devaki is talking to Krishna. He's offering her prayers to Krishna. Devaki says, at the time of cosmic annihilation, with the end of Brahma's lifespan, the five gross elements enter into primeval matter, and everything manifest is merged back into unmanifest nature by the force of time. Kala vegena, nashte loke, dviparard avasane. The two halves of Brahma's life are finished, the worlds are destroyed, and the physical elements go back into the Mahatattva, Adibhutam. The manifest nature goes back into Pradhan, the unmanifest nature. And this all happens by the force of time. When it's time to happen, there's no stopping it. It's controlled by time, the annihilation. It's predestined when it's going to happen. Therefore, better not to be around here at that time. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Shesha. Atak Shesha Sangyaha. Okay, it says you are Shesha Sangyaha, but Jiva Goswami is adding one word, Ataha, therefore. Because you alone remain, Shishyate, therefore you're called Shesha, the remainder. Shesha is a name of an expansion of Vishnu, but Vishnu himself can be called Shesha, because he alone remains when everything's destroyed. Sankarsana Baladeva is called Shesha because Krishna is everything and Balaram is everything else. This is to establish that even when the Lord comes to the material world, his body is eternal. The world gets destroyed at the very end of its duration, prescribed time, but you remain. And it's not that his body is destroyed and his soul goes someplace else. No, his same body remains. Commentary. The word Swarup is difficult to translate neatly in English. The Swarup of something is its essential identity. What it is originally before it begins to acquire external trappings and undergo transformations. A living being is in essence an individual consciousness. His physical and mental bodies, the property and social connections he acquires, and the changes of growth and decay he lives through are all external to him. The Supreme Being, Bhagavan, also expands and transforms through his energies, but his body and the place where he resides and the people he chooses to associate with, they're all non-different from his Swarupa, what he is originally. Only the temporary manifestation of Bhagawan's Maya Shakti. He does have his Maya Shakti, and they're external, different from him. Jivas are not really different from him, but in a more real sense, the Maya Shakti is different from him. But it's not absolutely different, it's just more different than the Jivas. But there's a sense in which even the Maya, the inert matter, is also, in a sense, identical with him, but less identical than the Jivas. And they're less identical than his own body and his own personal qualities and his own abode of Vaikuntha. Okay, his body, the place where he lives, and his associates are all non-different from his Sarupa. In this way, he differs from the finite souls, who are separate from their bodies, their associates, and their possessions, and from the place where they live. The expressions of the personal spiritual Swarupa Shakti of Bhagawan are said to be Swarupa Bhuta, or in other words, to belong to his very self. In Sri Vishnu Purana, Bhagawan is defined as he who possesses in full the six main kinds of personal qualities, or bhagas, opulences. We already read that in the Sarvasambhadani, but this is for the benefit of those who haven't read the Sarvasambhadani. It's in the back of the book, and those who have weaker hearts can avoid it. So here's a mention just of that one verse here in the commentary. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasakshriyaha jnana vairagya yoschapi shunnam bhaga itingana. Bhaga indicates the six assets of all controlling power: all physical strength, all fame, all opulence, all knowledge, and all renunciation. The section of Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha just finished, text 23 to 27, established that these personal gunas of the Supreme Lord belong to his Swarupa. 23 to 27, those anuchedas established that the qualities belong to his Swarupa. Now we're describing that his body belongs to his Swarupa. The body of Bhagawan is not ordinary. Therefore, it is referred to respectfully as Sri Vigraha. That's the words that Jiva Goswami uses here. Not just Vigraha, but Sri Vigraha. His divine form. Not only does it belong to his Swarupa, it is the complete purna outward display of his personality. To prove that the Sri Vigraha of Bhagawan is Swarupa Bhuta, it will be sufficient to show that it is eternal. Because anything that is in fact eternal must belong to the Supreme Lord's inner nature. That's another argument. If it's really eternal, it must belong to the Swarup Shakti of the Lord. Nothing that's really eternal is outside of the Lord. Mundane thinkers are not exactly correct when they consider the ethereal sky or some other phenomena of nature to be eternal. It's the Vaisheshika philosophy or the Nyaya Vaisheshika combined philosophy. They say that certain material entities, they don't even talk about material and spiritual, but certain things are eternal. Time is eternal. The sky is eternal. Basically, anything that's infinite in size is eternal. Jai Shri Gurney Tai. I think they also say that the mind is all-pervading and therefore eternal. According to Nyaya philosophy, the mind, we say the mind is infinitesimal. It's atomic in size. And therefore you can only think about one thing at a time because the mind is single-pointed. It's a single point in size. It has only limited scope of attention. But for some reason, in the Nyaya philosophy, they say the mind is infinite in size. And anything that's infinite in size, according to them, is eternal. So they have an eternal mind in their menagerie. Mundane thinkers are not exactly correct when they consider the ethereal sky or some other phenomenon of nature to be eternal. According to the Bhagavatam and all authorized Vedic Shastras, all the elements of matter, including Akash, will merge back into the Supreme when the universe is annihilated. Okay, even the Mahatattva is merged back. Just the Pradhan remains, always, even in the annihilation. Yes, we agree that the Pradhana, the original form of nature, is eternal. Madhvacharya says that, and we agree with it. But the Mahatattva is not eternal. It merges back at the end of the universe. And everything that comes out of the Mahatattva, including ether, is not eternal. You can say time is eternal. I think Baladeva Vibhushan says that, the time is eternal. But it's inactive when the universe is not there. In between creations, time is not acting. Neither is Pradhan. So time is also eternal. But time belongs to the Lord Swarupa. Yes. Pradhan is eternal, yeah. The original, undifferentiated form of material nature, in which there's no differentiation of the modes, no effect of time, actually. As soon as time starts acting, the modes start evolving. And Pradhan has already turned into Mahatattva. But when there's no effect of time and no imbalance, no manifestation of anything, that Pradhan, in that form, Pradhan is eternal. Continuing here, in text 10, Lord Brahma's vision of Vaikuntha, this is in Anuchet 10, Lord Brahma's vision of Vaikuntha was narrated from the second canto, chapter 9. There Brahma saw the Lord of Vaikuntha in his Sri Vigraha. So here's a description of the Sri Vigraha. There's plenty of such descriptions in the Bhagavatam. We read just about the appearance of the Lord to Lord Brahma. I think Brahma and Shiva saw his, when he came personally to help the demigods before the churning of the ocean of milk. He came in person, but the demigods couldn't see him because of his effulgence. Only Brahma and Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva saw what he looked like. And there's a description of his personal form there that we just read in the morning Bhagavatam recital. Here's what Brahma saw in the second canto, ninth chapter. Didarsha tatrakila sattvatam patim shriyat patim yagya patim jagat patim sunanda nanda prabalar hanadibi swaparshadagriyai parishevitam vipum vitya prasad abhimukam drigasavam prasannahasaruna lochanananam kiritinam kundalinam chaturbhujam pitam shukam vakshasi lakshitam shriya. Lord Brahma saw there the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the Yadus, the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, the Lord of all sacrifices, and the Lord of the universe. He was attended by servants like Nanda, Sunanda, Prabala, and Arjuna. His immediate associates, seen, this is what he looks like now, seen leaning favorably toward his loving servitors. He was nectar for Brahma's eyes. Adorning his face were a contented smile and red-tinged eyes. He was dressed in yellow robes and wore earrings and a helmet on his head. He had four hands, and his chest was marked with the lines of the goddess of fortune. We read any number of very similar descriptions throughout the Bhagavatam, and you'll find them in many Puranas. You may consider it repetitive, but this image of the basic features of the body of the Supreme Lord in his form as Narayan or in any of his forms, this is a very important meditation, to meditate on the vigraha, the actual appearance of the Lord in his bodily form. Just like we chant his names repeatedly, millions, billions of times. So we can also meditate on his body millions and billions of times, and there's no harm. In fact, there's only one makes more and more advancement the more repetitively he does such meditation. So don't blame the Bhagavatam for being repetitive in its description of what the Lord looks like. Rather than get into the minor details of how his hair was combed and exactly what style of earrings and all minor details, the major, important, the basic points are said over and over again so that it gets fixed in our consciousness. Then the details we can naturally realize when we actually develop a taste for the beauty of the Lord. Then the details we can appreciate and we will perceive them ourselves. Okay, the same passage, five verses before these, also stated Nachakala Vikramaha, and there is no influence of time in Vaikuntha. This implies that Vaikuntha is not created or destroyed. If Lord Narayan is also associated with his abode as its ruler, then he must be eternal in the same way as it is. And according to the Uttarakhanda, chapter 91, of the Padma Purana, which was already cited in text 10.7, repeating that, Tasya Pare Paravyomni Tripad Bhutam Sanatanam Amritam Shashvatam Nityam Anantam Paramam Param Shuddha Sattvamayam Divyam Anantam Ramanak Param. Beyond the far shore of the Viraja River, in the spiritual sky, is the eternal supreme abode, the three quarters of existence. Undying, unchanging, perpetual, and unlimited, it is comprised of the pure mode of goodness. We had a long discussion about all that and a long digression into the nature of pure goodness. That we've already covered in Anucheda 10. Last sentence, it is the effulgent, boundless home of the Supreme Truth. Continuing, the personality of Godhead is always visible in his Vaikuntha, and he sometimes also descends to the material worlds. Everything created in the material realm is non-permanent, but the Supreme Lord's avatars are exceptions to the rule. Even while entering the limits of time and space, the forms of the Lord's avatars remain purely spiritual. So the Lord's body is always eternal, even when it enters the material world where everything else is not eternal, except for the jivas. But the jivas' bodies are not eternal, not their manifest bodies in the material world. Continuing, their descents, the descents of the avatars, are conveyed and their pastimes conducted exclusively by the Swarupa Shakti. As Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sambhavami Atma Mayaya, not by regular Maya, but by his own mystic potency, he appears in the material world. I appear by my personal Maya. That's the Yoga Maya, which is a particular function. Yoga Maya is a particular function of Krishna's Swarup Shakti, his internal energy. The basic meaning of Shesha is remainder, what remains. Sri Krishna is the original Godhead appearing in his complete personality, and his brother Balaram is called Shesha because he provides Krishna everything else he requires. What does he provide? Balaram provides a place to live, companionship, clothing, furniture, and so on. In Sri Vaikuntha, Krishna's expansion, Lord Narayan, rests on the bed of Ananta Shesha, the thousand-hooded serpent who expands from Balaram. And sometimes Krishna or Narayan himself is called Shesha because he alone remains when the universe has been destroyed. Shesha on top of Shesha. Because when the universe is destroyed, Mahavishnu is lying there on top of Shesha. Okay, the next verse of the three verses describing the transcendental nature of the Lord's body, spoken by Devaki. Second verse. Tatra yuktihi. A logical argument for this is given. A logical argument how his body is eternal. Okay. Yoyam kalastasya te vyakta bando cheshtam ahus cheshtate yena vishwam nimeshadir vatsaranto mahiyams tam tveshanam kshemadama papadye. O friend of the unmanifest material energy, by the almighty force of time, with its parts, from the blink of an eye to the complete year, the entire universe functions. That same time is itself considered a function of yours. Let me offer my full surrender unto your lordship, the reservoir of all good fortune. Everything's controlled by time, but he's not. The Supreme Lord is the controller of time. It's his energy. Jiva Goswami glosses as follows. Hey, avyakta bando, sanidhya matrena, prakriti pravartaka. O friend of the unmanifest. That means the initiator. How is Krishna the friend of the unmanifest? Because he's the initiator of nature's movements by his mere presence. He just happens to be there, and he happens to look at Prakriti once, and that sets Prakriti into action, and she divides and evolves. Okay? Cheshnam nimeshaon mesha rupam. Time is called your function. Cheshta, activity, function. Time is called your function. In the form of, what kind of function? Particularly in the form of the opening and closing of your eyelids. This is also stated in Shruti. Shrutischa sarve nimesha jagire vidyutak purushadadi. Where's that from? Parivampu? Purusha Sutta, isn't it? No, it says Maharanarayan Upanishad. I'm sorry, that's not Purusha Sutta. It's not? Okay, it isn't. It's the Maharanarayan Upanishad. Sorry. And what it says is, all the moments of time, the nimishas, took birth from the Purusha, their special illuminator. Well, time is made out of different size pieces, but just as all material objects are made of atoms combined into molecules and bigger entities, so you can explain all of time as made up of, ultimately, of small nimishas, or atoms of time, and then they build up into bigger pieces. So all the moments of time took birth from the Purusha, their special illuminator. Illuminator. This is Vidyuta, from the Vidyut. Vidyut is lightning. But it's a source of light, Vidyut. Vidyut, dyut means to shine. So that which shines splendidly can be called Vidyut. And conventionally it means lightning. But here it means you, the original source of the light that's given to the time. The time is put into action. It's activated by the glance of the Lord. Yes, bro. I'm sorry? Instigator, but the word here is illuminator. So I'm trying to explain it according to the word that's used. It's more like activator. You know, you have a seed, you pour water on it, that activates the seed. Well, the time is activated by the Lord's looking at it. Or actually by its coming out of his eyes, it's coming in his glance. Not only is he looking at it, he's looking out and it's coming out in his glance, time. And that activates the time when he sends it forth through his glance. That's why it's Purushad, Saptami, expressing what? Not Saptami, Panchami. Panchami expresses what? Upadhanam, the point of departure. The time is not going into the Lord, but it's coming out of the Lord. Out of his glance. Not that his glance is going to it. It's coming from his glance. All the moments of time took birth from the Purusha, their special illuminator. Light enters the eye, but even in normal process of seeing, light enters out from the eye. It bounces on the eye and comes out again. That's the Vedic understanding. The light rays reflect on the retina of the eye. So light comes out as well as goes in. And in the case of the Supreme Lord glancing at time, that's how he activates time, by sending it out in his glance. Okay. Sarve nimesh adaya palavaya visheshena dyotate vidyut purushat paramatmeti shuti padartaha. So the word purusha, as used in shruti texts, shruti padartha. Padartha means the artha of a pada, the meaning of a word. It's the idea that some word refers to. I have a name, and I'm the padartha. I'm the meaning of the name. The meaning of the name is the person whose name it is. That's padartha. So padartha is also translated as existing thing, object. But object in the sense of being the meaning of some word, padartha. If you have an object that doesn't have any name, then it's not a padartha, if it can't be referred to. And in fact, as far as sensible philosophers are concerned, if you can't name anything or describe it at all, it might as well not exist. Its existence is a very vague, senseless thing if you can't even say anything about it. So everything that actually is real is a padartha, has some description of it by words. The realists in the Nyaya school, they have a slogan, astitvam gyeyatvam abhideyatvam. If there's existence, astitvam, then there must be gyeyatvam, possibility of being known. And if something can be known, it must be nameable. Abhideyatvam. Nothing that's real, according to the realists of the Nyaya school, nothing that's real can't be known. and nothing that can be known can't be named. Okay, so he's being called Vidyut. Why is he called Vidyut? Taking that as an adjective, not literally meaning lightning, but as an adjective meaning shining or flashing. Kalavaya visheshena dyotate Vidyut. He's called Vidyut, flashing, because he particularly illuminates. Visheshena dyotate. What does he particularly illuminate? All the portions of time is what he illuminates. All the portions of time, beginning from the blink of an eye. Sarvatra Shrishti Samharayur Nimittam Kala Eva Tasya Tu Twaranga Cheshta Rupa Twat Tau Tatra Nasambhavata Eveti Bhavaha. In other words, iti bhavaha. The purport of this is, time alone is the efficient cause in the creation and destruction of everything. But since time itself is a function of your body, twad anga cheshta rupa twat. It's a cheshta is an intentional activity. There's activities that just happen. You don't mean, you bump into someone, you don't intend to do it. But an intentional activity is called cheshta. So time is an intentional activity of your body. Twad anga cheshta. Because time is a function of your body, neither creation nor destruction can occur in your body. Time is simply a function of your body. It can't affect your body. Fire doesn't burn itself, doesn't destroy itself by burning. So time is simply an energy of the Lord. It doesn't affect him. And tatra hetu antaram shema dhamma. That's another phrase in the verse. Tam tve shanam shema dhamma papadye. Twa, twam. Twa eshanam. So twa is a substitute for twam. Translation. Another reason for this is given, how it is that time is eternal, that you are the reservoir of all good fortune. That your body is eternal. Because you're the reservoir of all good fortune, your body is eternal. Your kshema dhamma. Twa means you, all good fortune. Okay, if you had any wish, I give you 10 wishes. Whatever you want. So anything, no restriction. Probably everybody's list would include, let me live forever. Yeah, that would probably be in the top 10 of wishes for everybody. Unless you just forget about, you're not thinking straight. But if you have any sense, you would ask to live forever. So that's all good fortune includes the good fortune of being eternal. And you are the reservoir of all good fortune, kshema dhamma. So why wouldn't you be, if you're not eternal, then there's something unfortunate about you. Twa is just a substitute for you, twam. Atra swabhishtad tasmad avirbhavad eva kamsabhayam kaimutina vada tavati. Here the speaker, Devaki, has denied fear of Kamsa with the logic of what to speak of, simply on the strength of this appearance which has fulfilled her desire. Krishna has appeared, and he is the source of time. All destruction, all bad things that happen to us are caused by time. So if Krishna has time under his control, what can Kamsa do to us? Just so that expresses her, denies, in that way of saying it, she's denying any fear of Kamsa. Okay. And this appearance of Krishna has fulfilled all her desires. Therefore, for her, Krishna is Kshema Dama. All of my auspiciousness is fulfilled just by you becoming my son. Commentary. In common usage, Purusha means a man or a human being. In the Vedas and Upanishads, however, it becomes the title of the Lord of creation. The Purusha appears in three forms, as first the supersoul of the entire Mahatattva, then as the supersoul of each universe, and last as the supersoul of each living being. Those are the three Vishnus. In the couplet of the Mahanarayan Upanishad cited here, that was back in the purport. It's not cited here. It's just okay. Sarve nimesha jagyude vidyutad purushadadi. That is there in 28:2. In those words, Hare Krishna, the purusha is poetically called vidyut, lightning, which is understood usually as meaning lightning, but actually is first of all an adjective derived from the verb vidyut, to flash. So it means flashing. Just like deva means shining, but by convention it means demigod. And vidyut by convention means lightning, but by derivation, by etymology, it means flashing as an adjective. And it is used like that. It doesn't mean that Vishnu is a bolt of lightning. You know, that he's not a person. He's just a lightning bolt. No, it just means flashing here, or shining. This Anuchet presents a series of prayers spoken to Sri Krishna by his mother Devaki just after his birth. As Srila Jiva here comments, by finally appearing as her son after she suffered long tribulations, Krishna has now fulfilled her desires. That Kamsa will no longer be a serious threat to her goes without saying. Okay, so we'll stop here. There's a little more to this Anuchet, but we'll continue it tomorrow. All right, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.